Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's Shravanam, Mananam, Nididhyasanam. This is Prem from Team Radio Sai, and we're here to start this week's episode, but along with Hari Shankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust, who has been joining us every week. We also have somebody, I can't call him a guest, but of course, let's say he's making a return to our program. Sai Prakash is here, and we are very glad to have him on our show. So, before we begin, I offer my most loving pranams on behalf of all of us here at Swami's Lotus Feet. Sai Ram Hari and Sai Ram Sai Prakash.
Sai Ram Prem.
Sai Ram Prem.
So, nice to have you back again after a long time.
That's right. I'm really happy to be here as well. And looking at Prashnopanishad, many questions come to my mind.
Yeah, I mean, very profound topic as such. I mean, of course, every discourse of Swami is profound in its own way. Nothing to take away from that. But as a topic, as we were discussing the last week about the Upanishads itself, you know, how they don't go into that long introduction and an elaborate build-up of the theme, where it very quickly comes to the essence of their whole discussion, starts with a question, then starts with a straight answer, and how that is, in a way, just gives it in a very, very short capsule. And this Prashnopanishad, especially, we said it revolves around those few questions that few students ask their teachers.
You know, it's interesting because in this very place, when we were having the previous episode of Shravanam Mananam 1990 series, Professor Venkatraman was the guest here for one of those sessions, and with a lot of modesty, I said, "Sir, I have a question, possibly a stupid question." He said, "There are no stupid questions. There are only stupid answers." A question is a question. There is no stupid question as such. And it's interesting because students are always encouraged to ask questions. And the more you ask questions, the more you learn. And I guess this is a pointer in that direction.
But with a small difference that, in fact, in this Prashnopanishad, we see the teacher is actually waiting for the student to ask a discerning kind of question.
Okay. Right.
You know, what happens is the students, they are initially very enthusiastic.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think practically, first of all, they all come from backgrounds where they've been in such families, like where, you know, they've had sages in their own families, like they're the sons of sages, right? So they already lived, grown up and immersed in a background of learning about Vedanta, about Brahman. But they're now coming to a sage who they know, like, he's the pinnacle of that learning, right?
Oh, okay.
And so when they come to him, so all are, like, you can imagine that they're all enthusiastic and eager to know, get the secret, like, right away. He says, wait for 1 year. So,
thank God it's not like the Zen stories which we usually hear, you know, 12 years in 20
years.
12 years. But interesting thing, especially when you're talking about questions, one thing which comes to my mind is, there are two things which Swami says. One is, as you're saying, the students are always encouraged to ask questions. And Swami would also do that, you know, when there are sessions, when students are there. Swami would say, ask questions, you know, do you have anything to ask?
Right.
But at the same time, Swami says, samshay atma vinashyate. You know, you should not have doubts. So that's a very interesting difference between doubts and questions. And I think whenever we ask Swami also, when you ask a question, you should not have any doubt that you will get the answer. You may or may not understand it. I mean, as the sage was saying, that you probably need a little bit more preparation before you're able to comprehend the answer. But you don't ask with a doubt. Will the guru give me the right answer or not? Probably that's where the difference between doubt and question is. And you ask to know, not
exactly. The attitude, the attitude to questioning is more of acquisition of knowledge rather than, you know, doubt as such.
Right.
Rather than whether he's going to tell me the truth or whether he's not going to tell me the truth. It's more of what is it, kind of curious and inquiry. I think inquiry is a better term compared to doubt and samshaya.
Right. and the classic example which always comes to my mind is, you know, most of these scientists, they always will start with a very, very basic question. Probably a question that most of us would have left.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's Louis Pasteur who made that remarkable comment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when somebody asked him that so much of scientific invention and discovery seems to be serendipitous.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is like, you know, nobody's worked for it. Someone's working for microwaves and ends up finding radio waves. And somebody's
right.
working on some electrical thing and ends up finding something else.
Right.
And they ask him, you know, so why should scientific education be given so much preference?
Mm.
So then he makes this beautiful statement. He says, you know, luck favors a trained mind.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So even if it is happening in front of you, to be able to sense that there is something in it, is you need that training before. And I think that's what this Upanishad is about, where the Guru says that, you know, you're not yet ready to ask that question.
So that 1 year is the training period.
And in fact, we have actually gone one step into the thing. We have not yet played the clip where that 1 year part comes. But, I mean, as we were discussing even last week, the way Swami starts the discourse is very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because Swami starts with Paropakaram. And, I mean, the one on Upanishads, it's supposed to be the most esoteric of wisdom. But it starts by Swami saying that, you know, the trees live for others, the rivers live for others, and driving that lesson that, you know, even if you have understood the highest of concepts, how it expresses itself in daily life is when you start living your life, a meaningful life in the form of being of service to others.
Yes, I think even in the previous discourse, the topic there was Keno Upanishad, again a very esoteric and a very profound, Upanishad. But again, the preface, right at the beginning and to even towards the end, the final conclusion was that these are the ways of action that come out of the study of, you know, this Upanishad.
Right.
You take that. That is the take home. And even for us, like, you know, like at the end of the discussion, what we're looking for is, okay, how do I put this in action? It's all, you know, very nice to think about the abstract concept,
right.
The logic, or, you know, analyze it bit by bit. But the final thing is, like, how do we put that into practice, like tomorrow or right now?
I keep remembering that there is this movie Maya Bazaar in Telugu.
Mm-hmm.
And just for a comic refrain, they make the character of Dushasana a comedian in that one.
Uh-huh.
So they will be sitting and plotting, and, you know, Duryodhana and Shakuni and all of them will be doing. So every time they come up with a plan, Dushasana will say, oh, that's a very nice plan. Takshana kartavya venti. Now he keeps repeating that statement. It's very catchy. He says, okay, all that planning is fine. Tell me what has to be done now. That's actually a very profound statement.
Right.
He says, okay, all that is fine. Tell me what I can start right now.
What I can do now.
I think most of us are like that. I mean, especially when you read books which are talking of Advaita and all that, the question always is, how can I start it right now? What can I do right away? You know, rather than sitting and waiting for that to happen.
Right.
And I think here Swami points out that selfishness is the main thing that comes in the way. It speaks initially about paropakara, and then he says how selfishness and selfishness is the only reason. No, we have literally seen Swami, you know, hitting the table, swartham osva prayojanam, you know, with so much of can't you get these two things out? And several times Swami has, you know, we have repeated it over and over again, but he says, from the tip of my hair to the tip of my toe, there is not an iota of selfishness.
Yeah, and I think pretty much demonstrated it throughout his life.
Absolutely.
You know, in every, what I recall, like one episode, and this is practically, they say, it could have been his last physical interaction with any, you know, human being. This is what a person who was in the ICU with Bhagwan in the super speciality hospital, he was sharing that the Dr. Venugopal, a very reputed cardiac specialist from the All India Institute of Medical Sciences. So he was called in, and when he comes and, you know, he comes to see Bhagwan, like in the ICU, like one of the first things is, like, he asked Swami, like, how are you, right? And of course, there's a lot of pain, there's a lot of discomfort. And through all that, Swami says, Anandam. He says, I am happy. right? And see, even at that moment when we would have all chosen to pour out our woes and ask for a little bit of attention, at that time, even then, Swami is still spreading joy. He's still spreading real, true happiness, right? Mm. Giving right up to the final.
In fact, that's what Ravik Master was saying in one of his talks in the Mandir, where when Swami had that first fall and he had to undergo that surgery, the way Swami, the things which unfolded in that during that particular time, each one was a lesson in itself.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to, they prayed to Swami that surgery has to be done. Then Swami said no initially, and then Swami said, okay, do it, but I'll come only to the general hospital. And they told Swami, Swami, we'll take you to some of the best hospitals in the city. And Swami said, why? What is good for my devotees is good for me.
Yes.
Wow.
And till the end, that's something which Swami maintained. And even to that, when they took him to the general hospital, apparently, I think Dr. Hegde or somebody, one of the doctors were going to operate on Swami. He was there. And Swami literally being taken in the stretcher, and Swami is looking at him, and Swami is saying that, hey, I had promised you that I'll call your family for an interview when your sister comes. So apparently his sister had come, and Swami was saying, when I come back, I will call all of them. Tell them, tell them Swami will call. He's saying that, even at that moment, as you're saying, that we all seek attention at the time when, when your body starts ailing. I remember one elderly gentleman used to be in Mandir. And in, we meet him after a long time, we'll ask him, uncle, how are you? So he will tell, no, I'm not fine. Because of course he used to have health problems. So typically, when we are ailing, we need that attention. But Swami was all the time thinking of the others.
I remember another teacher, he had the fortune of attending to Swami physically. And he mentioned this to me. He said, really when Swami makes that statement that I'm selfless from top to toe, he said he means it. Like, he really doesn't, have that much attention on what he needs, right? Like, he was giving one example. He said that once they had gone to, clean Swami's bathroom, and Swami has gone to Darshan. So, they decided, this is one of their duties. They go there and they realize that for 2 days, Swami's soap had run out, it was and he has not asked them. He literally doesn't ask anything for himself. He did not go and ask them, please replace the soap in my bathroom. He said, for every such thing, we have to find out ourselves. What does Swami need? Is Swami thirsty? Is he hungry now? What does he need? That is something that we have to ask him, and only then he will accept that, yes, this is needed. Till then, no.
Another incident which I remember is in Thrai Vrindavan. We have that marble flooring in the steps when he comes. So one day Swami was coming out, and Swami called Dr. Padmanabhan. He was an elderly gentleman, about almost 80 years or something. So when he came running to Swami, he slipped on that floor and he fell. Okay, nobody uses those steps more than Swami does. Okay, so the first thing would have been Swami must have thought, I'm the same age, I might also slip like this. And that too with Swami's flowing robe and all that. But the moment Dr. Padmanabhan fell, Swami immediately called one of the doctors who were there, and Swami called up, called one of the teachers and told him, call up his home and tell him that he won't be coming for lunch today. Ask him to take rest here and all of that. And the next thing which Swami was thinking is, he walks so slowly and he slipped. Our boys come running. If this floor is slippery, what will happen if they fall? Okay, and by that evening, this happened in the morning, by that evening, there was this rubber mat which was, they got it arranged there. Because the first thing Swami is thinking, what happened if the boys will come and they'll fall? That level of all the time thinking of others, and, Swami says, culture is nothing but concern for others.
Right.
And I think that was pretty much the, what we played last time. Of course, Swami starts the concept of the seen and the unseen. And the unseen being the basis for the seen, where padartha is the object, whether parartha is the unseen basis for what is there.
Yeah, the adhyam and
adharam. Right. So I think that's where we stopped last time. So we'll go to the next clip, and we'll discuss after that.
Pranam valane prani prakatistu untundali.
Beings exist because of the life principle or prana.
Prani yandu kudanu pranam untundi.
Within the living beings or prani is the life principle of prana.
దీనిని వైదిక విజ్ఞానమునందు ఆధునిక విజ్ఞానమునందు మ్యాటర్ అండ్ ఎనర్జీ అని రెండింటి యొక్క సమన్వయముగా విస్తూ వచ్చినది.
This was referred to by Vedic science and modern science as matter and energy, which is related to each other.
శివశక్తి యొక్క రస స్వభావం అనేటువంటిది కూడాను ఏకత్వమైనటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వంతో కూడేది అనేటువంటి సత్యాన్ని ఈ యొక్క ప్రశ్నోపనిషత్తు ప్రబలంగా వివరిస్తూ వచ్చింది.
ప్రశ్నోపనిషత్ ఎంఫాటికలీ డిక్లేర్స్ దిస్ ట్రూత్ that this divine unity is the essential nature of the Shiva Shakti principle.
కనుక వైజ్ఞానమునకు కాని తత్వశాస్త్రమునకు కాని ఏమాత్రము కూడాను భిన్న భేదములు కనిపించవు.
Therefore, there is no contradiction between science and philosophy.
కేవలం భౌతిక విజ్ఞానము పదార్థముతో కూడినట్టుగా మనము భావిస్తున్నాము.
We think that secular science is related to padartha.
తత్వశాస్త్రం అనేటువంటిది పరార్థముతో చేరినట్టుగా భావిస్తున్నాం.
అండ్ వీ థింక్ దట్ ఫిలాసఫీ ఇస్ రిలేటెడ్ టు ద పరార్థ.
పదార్థ పరార్థములు రెండు కూడాను అవినాభావ సంబంధములు అన్యోన్య ఆశ్రయములు.
ది ఆబ్జెక్ట్ అండ్ ఇట్స్ బేసిస్ ఆర్ ఇంటర్ డిపెండెంట్ అండ్ కో ఎగ్జిస్టెంట్.
ఏకత్వమును ప్రకటించేటువంటిదే ఉపనిషత్తుల యొక్క ప్రభావము.
ది ఇంపాక్ట్ ఆఫ్ ద ఉపనిషత్స్ ఇస్ ఇన్ టీచింగ్ దిస్ వన్నెస్.
కానీ దురదృష్టవశాత్తు ఈనాడు ఉపనిషత్తులన్నీ కూడాను కేవలము పదార్థమును ప్రబోధించినటువంటివే కాని పదార్థములకు సంబంధం లేదని భావిస్తున్నారు.
బట్ అన్ఫార్చునేట్లీ టుడే పీపుల్ కన్సిడర్ ద ఉపనిషత్స్ యాజ్ రిలేటింగ్ టు ద పరార్థ అలోన్ అండ్ నాట్ టు ద మెటీరియల్ ఆబ్జెక్ట్స్.
ఆధ్యాత్మికమనగా కేవలము భౌతికమైన ప్రపంచంతో సంబంధం లేదని కూడాను భావిస్తున్నారు.
దే ఆల్సో థింక్ దట్ స్పిరిచువాలిటీ హాస్ నథింగ్ టు డూ విత్ ద ఫిజికల్ వరల్డ్.
భౌతికమనగా ఆధ్యాత్మికులకు ఏ సంబంధం లేదని కూడాను విశ్వసిస్తున్నారు.
దే బిలీవ్ ద వరల్డ్ హాస్ నథింగ్ టు డూ విత్ స్పిరిచువాలిటీ.
చాలా పొరపాటు.
దిస్ ఈస్ అ బిగ్ మిస్టేక్.
ఒకటి ఆధారము ఒకటి ఆధేయము.
వన్ ఈస్ ద బేసిస్ ది అదర్ ఈస్ ద మేనిఫెస్టేషన్.
ఒకటి ప్రాణము రెండవది ప్రాణి.
వన్ ఇస్ లైఫ్ ఫోర్స్ అండ్ అనదర్ ఇస్ లైఫ్ ఫామ్.
ఈ రెండింటి యొక్క చైతన్యం యొక్క సమన్వయమే నిజమైనటువంటి జగత్తు.
ద సింథసిస్ ఆఫ్ కాన్షియస్నెస్ ఆఫ్ దీస్ టూ ఇస్ ద వరల్డ్.
ఈ జగత్తును మనము విస్మరించి దివ్యత్వాన్ని విశ్వసించటము ఇది కేవలము ఒక విధమైనటువంటి యొక్క సంకుచితమైన భావమే.
Forgetting this world and having faith in divinity is also a sort of narrow-mindedness.
జగత్తునకు దివ్యమైన శక్తికి సన్నిహిత సంబంధం ఉన్నటువంటి ఒక విశ్వాసాన్ని మనం అభివృద్ధి గావించుకోవాలి.
We must strengthen the faith that there is a strong relationship between the world and the divine power.
ఈ జగత్తు లేకుండినా మనం ఏ ఒక్క విషయాన్ని కూడా మనము అర్థం చేసుకోలేము.
If there was no world, we would not be able to understand anything.
జగత్తు లేకుండినా ఏ సత్యాన్ని కూడాను మనం గుర్తించలేము.
If there was no world, we will not be able to recognize any of the truths.
ఏది సత్యమో ఏది మిథ్యమని మనం భావిస్తున్నామో ఈ రెండింటికిని జగత్తే మూల కారణం.
What we perceive as real and the ephemeral both have world as the basis.
జగత్తును వదలి మనం ఏ యొక్క విజయాన్ని కూడా మనం సాధించుతున్నామంటే ఇది కేవలం అసాధ్యము.
Without this world, it would be impossible for us to achieve any victory.
జగత్తును ఆధారము చేసుకుని దివ్యత్వాన్ని అనుభవించుటకు ప్రయత్నించాలి.
Strive to experience divinity, keeping the world as the basis.
కనుకనే మానవత్వములో ఉండేటువంటి యొక్క దివ్యత్వాన్ని కొంతవరకు మనం అనుభవించాలంటే మానవత్వాన్ని కూడా మనం ఆధారం చేసుకోవాలి.
Therefore, if we wish to experience, even to an extent, the divinity inherent in humanity, we must make human nature the foundation. Once upon a time, 6 students, having become aspirants of knowledge, for the purpose of discovering truths that were unknown to them,
మానవత్వం వచ్చినందుకు నిజమైనటువంటి యొక్క సత్యాన్ని అన్వేషణ చేపట్టమే తన యొక్క కర్తవ్యమని.
Considering the inquiry into truth as the very purpose for which human birth was given,
జీవితం యొక్క పరమ రహస్యాన్ని తెలుసుకోవాలని,
to discover the ultimate secrets of life,
పిప్పిలాద మహర్షి దగ్గరికి వచ్చారు.
They approached sage Pipilada.
అక్కడికి వచ్చి అతి వినయము చేత నమస్కరించి,
going there they saluted him very humbly,
మహర్షి,
and said, great sage,
జగత్ ఉత్పత్తికి కారణమేమిటి, మానవ జీవితం యొక్క పరమావధి ఏమిటి,
what is the reason for the creation of this world, what is the goal of human life,
మాకు బోధించి మా సంశయాన్ని తీర్చమని ప్రార్థించారు.
Please teach us and clear our doubts, they prayed thus.
పిప్పిలాదుడు చెప్పాడు.
Then Pipilada said,
నాయనలార, ఇట్టి జిజ్ఞాస మీకు రావటము చాలా అదృష్టమే.
Dear ones, to have this quest for knowledge is your fortune.
కానీ ప్రతి ఒక్క దానికి కూడా ఒక అధికారం ఉండాలి.
But in every case there needs to be a certain qualification.
ఈ అధికారము లేనటువంటి యొక్క తత్వములో మేమిచ్చే ఆన్సర్ కూడా మీరు అర్థం చేసుకోలేరు.
When you do not possess such eligibility, you will not be able to understand the answer that I give.
ప్రతి చిన్న విషయమును కూడా దానికి తగినటువంటి అధికారం ఉంటుండాలి.
Even for the smallest of things, one needs the necessary eligibility.
ఒక పేషెంట్కు మందు ఇవ్వాలనుకుంటే అతను డాక్టర్ అధికారంలో ఉంటుండాలి.
To dispense medicine to a patient, you need the qualification of a doctor.
ఒక బ్రిడ్జి ఏమైనా కట్టాలనుకుంటే అతనికి ఇంజనీర్ యొక్క అధికారం ఉంటుండాలి.
To construct a bridge, you need the qualification of an engineer.
అదే విధముగానే జగత్తునందు నిత్య జీవితంలో మనం అనుభవించేటువంటి ప్రతి విషయమునకు ఒక అధికారం ఉంటుండాలి.
సిమిలర్లీ, ఎవ్రీథింగ్ దాట్ వీ ఎక్స్పీరియన్స్ ఇన్ డే టు డే లైఫ్ కాల్స్ ఫర్ అ సర్టన్ ఎలిజిబిలిటీ.
పాత్రను పురస్కరించుకుని ఏ పదార్థము ఆధారంగా ఉంటుండాలి.
ద మెటీరియల్ ఇస్ స్టోర్డ్ ఆఫ్టర్ కన్సిడరింగ్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ ద కంటైనర్.
కనుక మీ యొక్క వాంఛలు ఉత్తమమైనటువంటివి.
So your desires are noble.
కాని కొంత కాలమును తీసుకుని చక్కగా విచారణ సలిపి నిత్యానిత్య విషయ పరిశీలన సలిపి తద్వారా దీనిని అర్థం చేసుకుంటకు గుర్తించండి.
But take some time, inquire sincerely, discriminate between the eternal and the ephemeral, and then try to understand.
తొందరపాటు మంచిది కాదు.
It is not good to be in haste.
కనుక ఈ తొందరపాటు చేతనే మనము తెలుసుకోవాల్సినటువంటి యొక్క పరమ సత్యాన్ని కూడా మనం దూరమైపోతున్నాం.
ఇట్ ఈస్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ హేస్ట్ దాట్ వీఆర్ గోయింగ్ ఫర్దర్ ఫ్రమ్ ద గ్రేటర్ ట్రూత్ వీ మస్ట్ రియలైజ్.
ఈ తొందరపాటు వల్ల మనం కాలమును కర్మమును కాయమును కూడా వ్యర్థము గావించుకుంటాం.
బికాస్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ హేస్ట్ వీఆర్ వేస్టింగ్ టైమ్ యాక్షన్స్ అండ్ ఈవెన్ ఆర్ బాడీ.
జీవితం రావటమే పరమావధి యొక్క తత్వము.
కమింగ్ టు లైఫ్ ఇస్ ఇట్ సెల్ఫ్ ది ఎసెన్స్ ఆఫ్ ది అల్టిమేట్ గోల్.
పరమావధిని గుర్తించాలన్న మీరు తగినటువంటి ఒక ఓపికను సాధించాలి.
టు అండర్స్టాండ్ ది అల్టిమేట్ పర్పస్ యూ మస్ట్ డెవలప్ ది నెససరీ పేషెన్స్.
తొందరపాటు చేత మనం అనేక నష్టములకు గురి అయిపోతాం.
హేస్ట్ విల్ లీడ్ అస్ టు మెనీ లాసెస్.
కనుకనే హేస్ట్ మేక్స్ వేస్ట్, వేస్ట్ మేక్స్ వరీ, సో డు నాట్ బీ ఇన్ ఏ హరీ.
దట్ ఇస్ వై ఇట్ ఇస్ సెడ్ హేస్ట్ మేక్స్ వేస్ట్, వేస్ట్ మేక్స్ వరీ, సో do not be in a hurry.
Pillalara,
children,
meeru tondarapaatunaku emaatram kudunu mundake veyakoodu.
Never take any step in haste.
Karuba shaantamuto deenini saadhinchutakai kontha kaalam aashramanandundi aagmanu paalinchi kontha kaalam meeru jeevinchandi ani Pipiladudu samadhanam cheppadu.
Pipilada then said, to achieve this, peacefully stay in the ashram for a while, follow commands and spend some time.
That was the second clip from that discourse. As I was saying, that part of the 1 year which we mentioned actually comes in this clip. So we gave a sneak preview before we played the clip itself.
We were in a haste rather.
Right. But I think that initial part, that introduction, is very very beautiful. What Swami speaks about the Upanishads and you know how we misunderstand that the Upanishads have, you know, are concerned only with the spiritual matters and the science is concerned with the worldly matters. In fact, I think in one of the discourses, Swami says this. You know, the problem is, when you speak about the four purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, Swami says the problem today is that man thinks that if you're worldly, you can stop with dharma, artha and kama.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And if you're a spiritual person, you have to deal only with moksha and not with the rest of the three.
Oh, okay.
So Swami says, you know, both is wrong. You know, right. A person who's having a spiritual bent should not think that I have nothing to do with artha, dharma and kama.
Hmm.
And the person who is in the world should not think that I have nothing to do with moksha. My concern is only with the three.
Yes. I remember, in fact, when I joined here as a student for my MBA, somehow I too had this same, you know, misapprehension that when you come here, basically you got to give yourself totally to, you know, like Swami, you devote yourself so much. But at the same time, Swami was going on asking us like, okay, how much did you score in this subject? Why is scoring less?
Mm.
Like at every point of time, he demanded excellence in no matter what you're doing. Like if you're given yourself to your academics, if you're given yourself to, you know, sports, cultural activities, he demanded excellence from everything that you did. Right? There's no sphere where your attention had to be taken off. So the main thing was that attention was spirituality.
Right.
Right, your ability to shine your attention on everything that you do, being fully there on what you're doing. For Swami, that was spirituality. Like, I recall sitting, you know, during the darshan sessions, right? At some point of time, somebody had asked me, so, what is that spiritual practice which Swami recommends for all of you?
Mm.
So, I couldn't recall, like, a specific meditation or a specific, you know, this is, I was watching, so I thought, let me take a cue from those who are sitting very close to Bhagwan, like those students who are attending to Bhagwan. And I thought, like, what is the spiritual practice that they're getting right now? And I realized that when they're sitting there, right next to Swami, they have to be so aware of the small signs that Swami does or the very subtle things that he says and expects them to understand and execute. And that they cannot do without having their complete attention and awareness on what is happening right then and there. Like literally they had to have a 360 degree view, right?
Without
that, Swami would catch them where they were short. So that I realized, that is the training that Swami was giving them, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Like Swami tells a beautiful analogy for that, you know. He says, like the mother whose child is in the crib, you know, the mother is cooking, she's doing all the other works around. But Swami would say her attention is all the time in the, the child is calling out or is the child moving around, crawling around. And if you look at it, Swami doesn't say that it's okay to put a pinch of salt more in the food. Because your mind is, you know, on the child. I think Swami is suggesting that, you know, the lady of the house has, with practice, probably got so much proficiency that she can do the other activities of the house without giving that 100% attention.
Right.
But her focus is always there on the child.
Right.
So Swami would say that it's like that. You're in the world. Your focus should always be in God, on God.
Mm.
But at the same time, you're not, giving up the activities you're supposed to do.
Yes.
You continue to do that. I think that comes only when, you know, that practice is there.
In fact, it's very interesting because when I was in Chennai a few days back, there were people who were absolutely new to the Sai fold.
Okay.
And so we got talking and very, you know, they have the stereotyped imagination of what an ashram is.
Yeah.
And they have a pre-concluded notions that of course there should be yoga and of course there will be a 1 week long course and you will be smiling 3 inches broader than when you went into the course.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they have so many fads and imaginations about what an ashram stands for. So they were asking me like, what is it that is done in Prashanthi Nilayam?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure there must be yoga. I said, no, there is no yoga. And are there talks and, you get some experience, this, that. I said, no, spirituality is a very individualistic path. And each one has his or her own path. And then what did Baba teach? What did Baba? So, you know, it was almost coming to the same answer.
Yes.
Where Baba says that every act that you do is spiritual in nature and you have to give your 100% live in the present. And when I told that to some of them, they were so amazed they said, oh my God, what is meditation? Again, it comes back to this answer. What is yoga? It comes back to this answer. So, you know, Swami says unity of thought, word and deed and all that. But one way of looking at it is, of course, trying to achieve it and do it. But then when there is love, it automatically happens. Like the way you are saying about the mother, when there is love for the child, you're so attuned to it that it just flows from the heart.
Right.
And everything happens in its on its own. So then there is no distinction between what is spiritual and what is worldly at that moment.
Yeah, I recall actually in one of Swami's discourses, like I think it was delivered to Balvika's teachers, and Swami is telling them that you can't separate spirituality from your everyday life activities. He says, like, down to, like, when you're cutting vegetables,
right?
The context that you set for yourself is, I am cutting out the ego.
Right.
Mm. I'm cutting out my selfishness.
Hmm.
Right? The, Swami says that you have to, you can bring it, and this is how you bring spirituality into your everyday life.
Hmm.
Right? That's a wonderful teaching.
Hmm.
Also, going back to the discourse in the, you know, the first part of the segment, Swami is talking about, so the actually he's giving us a prelude about the first question which was raised by the student. And Swami is talking about how Prashnoparishad emphasizes this unity of like energy and matter.
Right.
And
right.
representing like Shiva and Shakti.
Right.
And I was just recalling, like, again, see, for us a lot of things, like, these are actually manifest in what we saw in Bhagwan's everyday life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was recalling two instances. One, someone again, he was attending to Bhagwan in the mandir. And he said that once Swami very quietly called him, he said, come into the interview room. And he was wondering what instruction Swami had to give. And Swami pointed to a butterfly,
mm-hmm.
which was in the interview room. And Swami wanted him to, you know, so gingerly take hold of that butterfly and release it outside. Swami didn't want it to be hurt in any way. So that thing of like Swami's concern for a living being, and that is understandable, that is a concept of ahimsa. Next, like how Swami used to place such emphasis on that when you close the door of Swami's interview room, he wanted it to be that smooth. You cannot like suddenly bang it like this. He wanted it to be very graceful, and he once explained saying that consciousness is there even in that door.
Mm.
So you have to be that mindful, that respectful of the consciousness in that door.
Mm.
You know, so I think that is why, you know, you speak of Swami's grace, gracefulness rather, in everything, that the way he walks, the way he does. But that is because he was intensely conscious of the consciousness in everything that he was handling.
Well, the consciousness in every part of his interview room is very, very powerful and prevalent. You know, we know the story of the crying walls. You know that?
Yes, I think your senior batch.
One year senior to us, they were having this interview, and suddenly somebody, one of the boys said, Swami, it's wet, somewhere it's leaking. Swami said, no, the wall is shedding tears because it is so moved with the love that I'm giving all of you.
Mm.
With the love that I'm sharing with all of you, we know the story of the crying sari.
Saris, yeah.
And it's so amazing. Then when you start looking at everything as Shiva Shakti.
Right. It also beautifully falls in place because, you know, the initial thing Swami starts by saying that having that concern for others. In fact, I think that 96 discourse, Swami was describing common sense. Like, you know, when you say common sense, that's a worldly thing, right? We don't think of it as spiritual.
Right.
So the way Swami defines common sense is so practical and beautiful. He says, when, where, who, what.
Oh.
You know, remember all these questions and act accordingly at that moment.
Yeah.
So you're speaking something, who are you speaking to? What is the situation? Where are you? So factoring in all of this, you speak. And then Swami goes on to explain, he says, you know, very, very humorously, Swami says, you're sitting and eating food and... there are some things which you don't speak when you're eating food. You know, Swami is saying that the other day somebody was serving a person, and he's saying, no, enough, sir, vomiting is coming. Swami said, you know, that's not something you say when others are sitting with you and eating food. See, this is like common sense when you, you know, synthesize it with concern for others.
Right.
Swami is saying, it's the same what, when, who, where, but I should not hurt others' feelings. I should not, you know, in any way disturb others' appetite or whatever it is. Right. And Swami is saying someone is serving to you. If you don't like the dish, say, you know, very politely, don't make faces. Because there's somebody else who's eating the same dish. You know, somebody else might, that might be the favorite dish for somebody else, or even for the person who's serving it, he might be the person who's cooked it.
Yeah.
So Swami is saying that, you know, just politely say enough, or, you know, smile and say thank you.
It translates into every small thing.
Being
every
conscious
small.
Every moment.
Or, yeah, being aware. You know, then it becomes awareness. Right. That's true.
And pretty much like Swami is building in filters, so many different kinds of filters, right? Like, you can always speak, I mean, you need not always oblige, but you can always speak obliging. Yeah? That is a filter. So, because your first impulse may be to say like no in the face, right? But Swami says no, that's not how you do things, right? So, like this, like Swami puts in place so many filters, and like last time we were saying, right? So, when you look at a person, you say that is a man of refinement. And that's how Swami, you know, builds in these kind of things. He puts in these training modules, so to speak, so that at the end of, like, I can imagine at the end of the summer course, the person who entered it is like entirely different from the, you know, person who emerges. Simply because of these additional filters that are put between our initial impulse and, you know, who we choose to manifest.
Many things we have seen very, very small. Because, you know, it's nothing great, but we have seen it happen in front of us. Certainly not going to name the person, one of my classmates. You know, initially when he came, typical behavior, you know, you would buy a packet of chips or buy a packet of some eatable. It would be safely held in his cupboard, locked and kept under lock and key.
Right.
And every now and then one he'll take, he'll eat. So if he shares one chip with anybody else, then your day is made. You're a very, very special person. You know, that's how he came into this one, and you know, so possessive about all his belongings. He won't share his fan, as simple as that. Won't share a pen. And I remember towards the end of the you know, year, probably during Shivratri or something, you know, we would have these prasadams which is given to everybody. And there would be some special prasadam which will not come beyond the fourth row sometimes. You know, Swami would come and distribute personally. So if you're lucky, right in front, you will get it. So this boy happened to be in front and he got that special prasadam. So me and a few of my classmates were sitting behind and we were just seeing this boy. Swami just gave the prasadam and just turned and walked. Immediately, he opened it and he started sharing it with the people behind him who did not get. And it happened so naturally, you know, he was doing it so naturally, and we could see that beginning of the year what he was, and at the end of the year, I think when Swami is constantly saying this, you know, the concern for others, you think of others, and that is really the fulfillment in life. I remember another very beautiful incident which one of the teachers was sharing, apparently once when Swami was in the balcony in the Trayi Brindavan, and Swami was giving prasadam. They had got apples to Swami. So Swami picked up one apple, and that was again after one of Swami's falls, and Swami was not keeping quite well. So Swami lifted one of the apples, and it was quite heavy. Okay, and Swami put it back. So the teacher who was holding the thing, he said, oh, maybe Swami is not able to lift it. Swami is feeling so weak. And immediately Swami looked at him and Swami said, Adhikadu Bangaru. He said, not that. See, the apples are quite heavy. I can't throw it from here. Somebody might get hurt. You know, that level of all the time thinking about others.
Wow. Right. In fact, in no other incidents it really comes out as powerfully as his visit to Harshi. And when, you know, he was just taken, Swami wanted to see the fields. So when he went for a round, and on his way back, he saw these huge Shamiana tents. And he asked the hosts in Harshi, like, whom are these tents? What are these tents for? And they said, Swami, this is for Prasad. He was so happy. He said, you are serving Prasad to all my devotees? And that evening, he specially called all the family members of the who hosted that visit. And they all sat on his table. And then he made the statement. He said, Prime Ministers, Presidents, heads of countries, they want this opportunity to sit with me on a dining table, and they have not got it. But I am giving this to you, and I am not at all hungry. I am so full. I am in bliss because you have served my devotees. He was so thrilled. He was so happy. He says, there is no hunger. I am so full. I feel so complete.
Reminds me of a very beautiful incident. How do you manage the situation when you have two people and you have to think of the concern of both groups.
Okay.
Narrating this incident, when Swami was going to Kodai, I think going or coming back from Kodai, Swami was driving through this place, Karur and all of these. Swami used to go by road those times. So apparently in one of those villages, they had erected a huge shamiana and devotees were sitting and doing bhajans. And there was one person apparently who had arranged for this whole thing. He had kind of understood what Swami would really look for, because none of them were on the side of the road or anything. All of them were seated under this thing, and you know, some of them outside in the sun also, but all of them seated without, you know, moving around or coming near the road, and sitting and doing bhajans. So Swami came that said, as soon as he saw this gathering of, you know, people so disciplinedly sitting there, Swami said, hey, I have to go there. Right, you know? So Swami went there, and then Swami sat there for some time. They had kept a chair for Swami. And then Swami called this person who had arranged for this thing, and Swami asked him to speak. Okay. This person was in his ecstatic mode. So it seems he went on and on and on, and he wouldn't stop. Mm. Okay. So Swami was here. He had to acknowledge the devotion of this person.
Mm.
But Swami was seeing that there were a lot of people who were sitting in the sun. It was sometime 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm.
Okay. And this person is not stopping. So Swami, what he did, he got up, he waved his hand and materialized a huge sugar candy and went and stuffed it in that person's mouth. He said, you know, called him and gave it to him. And then Swami came back, and in Kodai, you know, Swami was saying that, see, what to do? That person was speaking with so much love, I couldn't disappoint him.
Hmm.
But, you know, people are sitting in the sun, I couldn't bear that too. So what do you do when you want to stop somebody from speaking? Gag the mouth.
Done in a very sweet manner.
Right, absolutely, you know, without hurting either party.
Right, yeah.
Then, of course, after this part where Swami speaks about, you know, the Upanishads being applicable for worldly as well as... This is a very powerful statement that Swami makes, you know, that to believe in God while rejecting the world is also narrow-mindedness.
Yeah. Hmm. And in fact, he continues to say that, you know, our search for God, we would be helpless in it without the aid of the world, right? Like, it's... And... he says we are able to inquire and conclude as what is true because the world is present for observation. It is like precisely saying the same thing that we were, you know, concluding the last time, that essentially the world is like your laboratory.
Mm.
Right? So all these truths, like Swami used to emphasize, the truths are inherent in you. It's like we are not trying to learn something new. It's educare means that the values, this deep knowledge is already within us.
Mm-hmm.
And so the world is that laboratory where it tests you, right? Or you test yourself as to whether to what extent you can express these truths.
Mm-hmm.
And given the background that you're already that divinity.
Right.
Right? And it's like you're...
You know, I was going through a small write-up on truth, you know, spoken truth.
Mm.
And what do various scriptures speak about that? Because we know that truth does not necessarily mean only the spoken truth. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that you can, you know, that is excused to say the lies. So in that, you know, they say, I mean, then the author of that article goes into a description of dharma and all of that. And he writes in that, you know, how much dharma changes when someone's life is in danger.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. So he says, if somebody else's life is in danger, if the person who's having to speak his life is in danger,
right?
You know, it changes so much, and that's why, you know, he writes a very beautiful piece in that. He says, that's because of the importance that human life has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if you're the highest of a spiritual person, you don't give up the importance there is in the human life.
Mm.
Because what can be learned through the human experience, as you were saying, what can be learned and acquired by living in the world is so precious.
Right.
And they say that all scriptures actually, you know, have a lot of emphasis on that. Never forget that. And that's why, you know, I think there is a concept of apad dharma, they say.
Mm.
When someone's life is in danger, the way the dharma is to be followed is completely different.
Oh, okay.
But only problem is we are scared all the time. We are scared for life at every situation in life, and that skews our idea of dharma all the time. But they were saying that, you know, when there's a very interesting part in Manusmriti, I hear they give a situation when someone's life is in danger and the dacoit comes and asks you and you know where that person is, but you should not tell. Then he says that don't say anything, say hmm. So if by saying hmm, it will confuse, you know, say something else. So, you know, how try to be as truthful as possible, but if the truth is going to give rise to even doubt, then try to avoid it. And where silence can be used, use silence.
In fact, I think Swami used to give a even more resourceful answer. Right? You recall Swami used to say in such a situation, what you could say is that, you know, the eyes which saw, they cannot speak.
Yeah.
And the tongue which can speak, it has not seen. So.
And I think one of the teachers were once saying, Swami had told in their interaction with them, if you speak one word, it's too little. If you speak two words, it's too many. Swami said you should speak in between.
My goodness.
And that only Swami knows. You know, it's almost suggesting that unless you reach the state of, you know, mental balance from which, you know, Swami operates, you will never know that perfect balance.
Right. Yes.
So the whole idea of this, you know, trying to understand life and going into you know, that spiritual state of elevated state is to come from that level of balance and speak that 1.5 words, I think.
Right. It's amazing because, you know, he used to call that as knack yoga.
Oh, really?
Knack yoga.
Okay.
Annitki knack kavalra. Knack. You should have that yukti.
Yukti.
Right. He used to say, he has, in fact, I remember very clearly, one of those days he's standing on the veranda with his hands in the back and he's saying, boys, how many types of yoga are there? So, Swami, Ashtanga yoga, 8 types, Patanjali, 9 types. 9th is knack yoga. That is most important. Annitiki oka knack undali. There should be a yukti, should be a way of doing it. Means knack not in a different sense, but in a sense of not hurting anybody, in a sense of not putting anybody down.
Walking the, you know, fine edge. Right?
Exactly.
You know, one interesting incident I recall at this point is, apparently the summer course was on and one of the guest speakers, Swami would say that strictly 45 minutes, maximum for 1 hour for each speaker. And this speaker wouldn't stop. He went on for 1.5 hours and Swami was in the audience. Okay. And Swami came back and he was furious. He said, this is not right and this should not be allowed. He comes back and he called the Vice Chancellor and said, no, you should never allow this. And Swami went inside the interview room and got a bell. He said, at the end of 45 minutes, you ring the bell and ask the person to stop. Okay. You know, what will be the example you will set to the students and all of that? Swami has this discussion, comes out. The speaker of the day is waiting for his blessings. Okay, and so the moment Swami says, wow, Bangaru, it was very nice and all that, Swami says, you spoke well. So this person says, Swami, when can I give another talk? Okay. Swami, you know, very, very beautifully patted him on his back and said, everybody has to get a chance, Bangaru. You know, the ability to you know, not hurt. Of course, it's not that Swami did not have sharp words when it was needed. Right?
Yeah.
You know, as students, we've received that also. When you need that reprimand at the right time, one of the old devotees was sharing, you know, Swami is like that. Swami used to tell, I'm like the mother elephant which walks into the forest with the baby elephant. Swami would say the baby elephant is between the 4 legs of the mother elephant. Okay? And that's how protective the mother elephant is. If the baby elephant tries to stray away, gets one kick from the right leg. It tries to stray away to the left, one from the left leg.
But that's what Swami also said, that Hakkundira, I have that right over you. That's why I take the liberty of correcting you.
Yes.
I won't go to the street and stand and then correct somebody or shout at somebody there.
Yeah.
I have that right over you. So I take that liberty of correcting you. Very beautiful, very beautiful. Of course, that was very evident when he told one of the boys who tried singing a bhajan at Kodaikanal. Swami came, tum achcha baat kar sakta hai. You stick to speaking. That is your USP in your specialty, I think. Speak obligingly at its best, I think.
Or I think Swami would sometimes say that you sing very well, sing in your heart.
Yeah.
Swami will listen. No, that's again a, I mean, I was actually thinking of that. Swami would say, I mean, when you talk of spirituality, you think that it's only the feelings which matters. It's only the devotion, the bhava which matters. But Swami would be very strict about that when it comes to the bhajan group. Swami would say, you sing with raga and tala, the devotees will have
exactly.
the bhava.
Right.
Yeah. That there's
in
no
fact,
excuse for the effort.
And since we're just talking of music and you know, this suddenly this beautiful thing comes to my mind. This is in the life of a very popular Hindustani singer. Mm. And she actually lost her voice for many years. And because for a singer, the voice is her only, it's the only thing that matters mm-hmm. in her entire
right.
life.
Mm.
And she lost her voice. And for a very long time, several years actually.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in the music industry and the, you know, music lovers all over the world thought that's the end of her career. And her own family thought what will happen to her. And in that interview, she so beautifully says, till now I was singing aloud for the Lord. I thought He has given me an opportunity to sing within. And she said, every day I sang for Him within me. Every day I sang within me and I was sure that I'm going to get my voice back. And sure enough, after quite a few years, I'm not sure if it is 5 to 6 years,
mm-hmm.
she actually lost her voice and she just got back her voice again. And she started performing again.
Yeah.
And she said, this is because I sang for the Lord within me. I was telling the Lord all the time that these 7 notes, I have serviced and I have worshipped them with all my heart. Will they leave me? And she said, I have worshipped them with so much of love and I've, you know, dedicated my life to them. I'm sure they won't leave me. And I used to always sing for you outside. Now you want me to sing within myself for you. So that was her experience.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, you know, that conviction, that surety, when you go without that doubt, samshayatma, without that doubt, things happen.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think that is actually a actualization of what Swami used to say, right? That all your talents, all your skills,
mm-hmm.
and they should only be directed in the service of God.
Right.
Right.
I mean, you can clearly see that this incident actually portrays like how sacred it is, you know, the talents that God gives us and how they must be used back in His service in whatever way He commands.
Right. Then the last part of that clip which we played again is a very beautiful part
yeah.
where, you know, these disciples go to this Maharishi and ask him this very profound question. And he says that, yeah, I would love to give you the answer, but the answer will be of no use to you if you're not prepared enough.
Mm.
You know, very, very, very profound thing that, you know, how, I mean, at the end of the day, probably the answer is going to be something which we have spoken 100 times in
yeah.
you know, Shravanamanam, Aham Atma Brahma, or, you know, I am Atma Brahma, or Aham Brahmasmi, or something. But to listen to it that one time, and for that word to make a difference, I think it takes lifetimes of preparedness. Because I used to always think, you know, the bhajan which we sing, take the name of the Lord once and He will come.
Hmm.
You know, wonder, you know, we sing every day, morning and evening we sing. But what is this call once and He will come?
Hmm.
Probably it takes lifetimes of, you know, preparation to make that one call, one true
right.
call.
Right.
Till then it's only practice in your bathroom.
In fact, in the Upanishad, you know, while coming to this episode, actually the sage, he mentions that I want you to live with the following. He says, you should live with tapas,
right?
Penance. Then he says brahmacharya,
mm.
right? He says and shraddha, with that dedication. In fact, when I was reading this and I saw that word brahmacharya, which we commonly understand as being celibate, but Swami has a much stronger criterion.
Mm-hmm.
I remember in a discourse in Trayi, he said, lot of you think it's just about being celibate, but look at the word itself. He says brahmachari. Like who's the charistu untundi, the
mm-hmm.
mind, it keeps revolving around Brahman. So it's not just, you know, being celibate. Your mind should be constantly immersed in that question of like, what is Brahman? Who am I? You know, those things should keep pestering you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, you know, that the true questions spring out.
Right.
They're not the superficial
in
ones.
Fact, you know, in Brahmacharya, I think I was sharing with Sai Prakash earlier also, Swami tells in a discourse,
mm.
even the practical Brahmacharya, Swami defines it.
Mm.
as different for different people.
Mm.
He's saying it's not purely celibacy.
Yeah.
Swami was telling in the discourse that even a grihastha can
yes.
practice brahmacharya,
hmm.
he becomes a brahmachari when he is in the company of other women.
Hmm. Correct.
Yes. Right. And that's a beautiful definition of it, because Swami says that the four qualities, satya, asteya, parikraha, and brahmacharya, and that it comes. Swami says if you have these qualities, it's good enough. You can make the entire journey.
Hmm.
At that time, Swami says it doesn't mean that those who are married, those who are into a family life, are not allowed to take to the spiritual path. Hmm. Swami says that the same brahmacharya takes a different meaning when it comes to their lives.
Very good.
Hmm. You know, when the sage is telling the students that, wait for some time in the ashram, I'm just imagining Swami going around in the darshan line saying, wait, wait, wait. people who try to give letters, wait, wait. And then somebody, with a lot of emotion, Swami, hey, stunt. Stunt chekra, stunt. that was a typical word, Swami. So this is all a stunt, stunt devotion. Don't give me a stunt devotion. You have real devotion. When you have real devotion, Swami will respond. Like some people, they have more emotion than devotion. And then Swami says that is all stunt. All stunt, stunt, stunt. Wait, wait.
The other interesting thing which struck me is, initially Swami says, when these people come and ask, Swami says that they've become jignasas, driven by their quest for spiritual wisdom, they come. And Swami says that not all of them have this. I think later in the discourse, Swami says that not everybody have this quest.
Okay.
And Swami would say that, Socrates' example, right? He says, unless you want wisdom like you want air when you're underwater, you don't deserve it. So at one hand, you're asked to have that kind of restlessness and craving for knowledge. On the other hand, you said, be patient. Right? That's what the king, the rishi says. It's going to take some time, follow all these four principles, stay in the ashram. Be patient, Swami. In the later part, he says, haste makes ways, and you should be patient. Patience is what prepares you for everything. It's one end, you have to have that burning desire to want it. I think if you don't have that desire, you're not going to be patient.
Right.
Because how will you give up everything for 1 year and wait for this one thing? Right? So you should have that kind of focus and eagerness to find it, but with that patience, the ability to sit and wait till it comes. As one of our teachers used to say, that's what Shirdi Baba used to ask. He says, Shraddha and Saburi. Shraddha is that burning desire and yearning to know. Saburi is patience.
Patience, right.
And I think he wants the students to go through that 1 year of churning, so that finally they ask the right question. That's how it is. And hopefully the next time around we'll be able to speak about what that question is, and then we'll delve into...
Right. Because the answer is might take 1 year to come, but I think we will go into that next week itself.
Right.
Because Swami completes the story, so... Sarprakash, thank you for joining us, and wonderful to have you again. So next time, again when you're here, we'll hope to continue this. So
it was a great session, and it's very pertinent to the kind of training that I'm going through right now as well.
Right.
Because I realize that more important than the answers is learning to ask the right questions.
That's true. So that, dear listeners, brings us to the end of this week's Shravanam, Mananam, Dhyasanam. We offer this effort at Swami's lotus feet. In a short while from now, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, Outside, Inside, Deep Inside. We'll meet you again next week at 7:30 with this program. Thank you for joining us. Jai Sairam.